From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armilla, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk about things we don't know we know. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, and joining me as they do each week, language experts and New York Times bestselling authors, Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hi, Kathy. Hi, Ross. Let's just jump off with a listener email from Abby.
Who wrote and said, "My spelling problem. I can't ever remember which words end in A-N-C-E versus E-N-C-E or A-N-T versus E-N-T.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a rule to help me?" And yes, there is.
And I'm going to give you the quick rule and the long one. The quick rule is, good luck, just memorize it. The long, and I think you're at the end of this, the long rule is the same. Basically, it leads you right back to that first rule. Go back to number one. Kathy, I'll start with the Latin just quickly. Then you could just... The A-N-C and the E-N-C basically go back to Latin. Latin, because these words are basically Latinate words. And now
I'm sorry, I have to interject. I never learned Latin, and more I'm picking it up just by osmosis, and more I'm thinking, ah, the hell with it.
I know. You know Orwell's famous statement on that, don't you, in Latin
well,
classical
Orwell
language?
And I are like this, Ross.
The Library of Alexandria had tried to collect every book in every language, but they had mostly, obviously, ancient Greek. And later on Latin. And George Orwell said he was so glad that as a kid, the ancient Library of Alexandria had been destroyed, because that meant he had so many fewer words to learn and so many fewer boring Latin and Greek things to read.
I love him.
It was mostly Greek, but I'm sure you could extend that to Latin. But anyway, ENC and ANC basically depends on the verb, the original verb from which it comes in Latin. And there are four basic groups or conjugations in Latin. The first group has A endings, so it'd be A-N-T. To love is amare, it has an A at the end, and then participles based on that have A-N-T endings. The other three have various I and E, and those tend to have E endings. That's it. That's the basic rule. So basically, if you know the Latin derivation, you're doing pretty well. But do you really want to like think about, is that a first conjugation?
No,
or third
I don't.
Conjugation?
No, I don't.
No. So there's one basic rule that you can sort of take, which is ANT also is more often used to form nouns like inhabitant, occupant, restaurant. And most of those words have the original first conjugation A.
Don't say that because that throws you. Just to say most noun endings, ANT, easier.
Yes, but an ENT is more commonly used for adjectives like excellent and efficient. But then again, typical English, you have defiant ANT, abundant ANT, and then you have student, which is ENT, agent. So that's the rule. It's not too helpful. There are other couple of rules Kath will go through.
Okay, hard C. I'm going to do it really fast because I'm already good. This is where I go just memorize.
That's
or
what
spelling
we both
correctly.
Said. Yeah.
Everybody, you know, like, okay, no big deal. No one's going to yell. Hard C or G. A-N-T usually comes after a hard C or G, like elegant, significant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
Soft C or G is E-N-T. Emergent.
Beneficent.
Yeah. ENT comes after QU. And I was going to say I couldn't think of any exceptions, but Ross has one there, which is piquant.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So basically, we go back to the same thing, just wing it, and then spell check, unless you have I think last week we had Fletcher's Italian spell
yeah,
check.
Yeah, turned out.
But even there, that would be helpful because I'm sure the Italian is more closely related to the Latin. So even if you have Italian spell check, you're set.
Gosh. Yeah. So thanks for the question, Abby. And obviously we answered it very clearly. Just memorize. Memorize.
Yep.
Wing it. Sorry.
Punt. I'm going to throw in one thing. The one problem, because we had another question similar to this, we'll talk about another time. But one problem with English in particular, though, usually is that it's like an amalgam of words directly from the Latin or the Greek, words that came through French from Latin or Greek into English, words that came from English or Germanic origins. So you just got a jumble of, I mean, the problem with rules in those our languages is just a jumble of rules fighting each other, saying, oh, I'm more important, you know, so you're memorized.
Which is why we're going to now do more rules you don't know you're following, but you're following without really thinking of it. Most of the time.
Yeah, actually, this is a good one. This is Socratic, Fletcher. We're going to use the Socratic method to like draw out how you know this rule.
Lovely.
Okay.
We're Greek. Remember that. Okay. Now, Fletcher, spell ship.
Ship. Like the big boat.
The big boat.
S-H-I-P.
Okay. What's the past tense of ship?
Oh. So we're doing it as a verb. Shipped. S-H-I-P-P-E-D.
Correct.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Okay. What's like a person who ships things?
A shipper. S-H-I-P-P-E-R. Uh-huh.
Now you wish we would stop. So spell stop. No, stopped. You wish we had stopped.
I wish, well, S-T-O-P-P-E-D. Right. So we're adding we're adding that extra letter there every time.
Okay, what's the rule, though? Can you figure out the rule?
Can you figure out why this is, like, following?
I want to talk about stop without the extra P here in a second, because I've got something that I always thought was really funny. But what's the rule if we've got a consonant ending a word? Is it a particular kind of consonant, I wonder? Then you need to double it to add the suffix ed or
You are so close. You're right, a consonant preceded by a one vowel.
Okay, great.
Because like stoop, you don't do s-t-o-o-p-p-e-d.
Good, of course. Okay, that makes that makes sense. Now, who knows if this is true, but I read it somewhere and I thought it was funny. Some guy got a ticket for stopping on top of like a hill, and there was a sign there that said no stopping, except it was spelled s-t-o-p-i-n-g, and he took it to court because a stope is here. I just looked it up. Stope, which is what that said. It's no, stoping, a usually step-like excavation underground for the removal of ore that is formed as the ore is mined in successive layers. He said, I was not removing any ore. I was doing no mining there. Supposedly he got off. Now who knows, but
I hope
but
it's
I love
true
it. Yeah, I hope it's true too.
I love that.
So add those extra p's, everybody. Okay, so we have a word that ends in a consonant with one vowel ahead of it. You got to add an extra letter to add a suffix there.
And you don't if it's more. However, you know, it's wonderful that we're now in I'm now in Canada, because Canada has British rules sometimes. So like quarreling.
Oh.
How do you spell quarreling?
Quarreling. Yeah, I do. Okay, so Q-U-A-R-R-E-L. Now, do you make it another L-I-N-G? I probably would, but Americans probably wouldn't, would they?
No, exactly.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. Oh, cancel. Cancel. That's the one that I always end up adding the extra L on. Cancel.
Me too.
I do too. Yep, I do too.
Wait, canceled. The word canceled, does it just have one L in English?
In American English,
I mean,
one L.
Sorry, American English, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, British English, double L.
Yeah, I have double L automatically with my Canadian keyboard.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, but I want to do the corollary to the words of one syllable that end in one consonant preceded by one vowel. You double the consonant. That's what we're saying. Planned, begged, stopped.
Okay.
Okay, now, refer. What is the past tense of refer? R-E-F-E-R.
Referred.
Mm-hmm.
With two R's, right? Isn't that right?
Correct. So we're doing that. We're doing that thing.
Okay.
But I'm going to throw something out here. Refer is two syllables.
Oh.
Right.
Oh.
I mean, the rule, it shows you again that in general, the rule is one syllable, two, but then in refer, it's two syllables. It still has two R's in it.
So you have to listen when it's more than one syllable, is what we're saying. When the stress is on the second syllable, refer, you double
deter,
the consonant.
Deter.
deterrence is double R.
It's doubled. Okay.
Here we go back again, though. This is the whole problem with these rules. These rules really are in our heads.
Mm-hmm.
And we basically sort of know them. And we make mistakes, but we kind of know these words, these rules.
Yeah.
And we don't want to learn too much about them because as we're doing it here, they get real boring real quick.
Well, and they start to make your
and
head
real
swim,
complicated.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's we're a lot better off just knowing them instinctively. Because having to know those rules makes us stop and think way too much about what we're doing.
Exactly.
But we go back to the grammar controversies that we wanted to do more about. Because ultimately, though, isn't it like, because these are constructs put upon us. You know what I mean? I mean, language is organic. We learn how to speak organically when it's our native tongue, I should say. And I think that the minute you start doing the rules, I mean, Randy and I were talking about with Spanish, the more rules we're learning, the more we're panicking. We're losing.
Yeah.
It's better to wing it and blow it and have people go, you said that completely incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, you're just busy going like, well, wait a minute, in this part.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I completely agree. I found that with Arabic at the Foreign Service. I learned all this like Arabic stuff and I learned all these rules to it. And I was constantly panicking.
Yeah.
Then I went there and then I was speaking it. And then I internalized, but I think it's good to know that have the rules and suffer through them a little bit. Then you go there
a little bit,
and then you go there and you sort of instinctively know it in a weird way. And then you learn by mistake and error, trial and error as well.
Imagine you've got a big building with lots of doors and rooms and floors, and you could either look at a floor plan of the entire big building beforehand and try to memorize the whole thing and then go walk through it. Or you could just start walking through it and go into the wrong doors and bump into things. But eventually you'd figure
I'm the bottom one.
Right. But eventually you'd figure your way around and you'd know the place pretty well because you knew all the mistakes you made and you kind of learn it.
Yeah.
As opposed to trying to memorize all the floor plans and then go in, then you're going to be thinking too hard about all of the floor plan that you tried to memorize, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I personally think you need kind of a combination, though. I think it's helpful to know some of the rules and then also go there and don't overdo them, but have a feel for them, I think is important.
Mm-hmm.
You are better than that. I think you've got that scholarly tendency. I have to bumble around like a moron and bump into the doors.
Oh, I'm bumping in all the time, Kat. I'm not saying that. I'm bumping away.
That's why you're getting a new hip, huh?
Yeah, right. Oh, no, I mean, heaven forbid. I bump. But I think it is helpful to also know a few of the rules as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what we're doing here. And I think a lot of times we just instinctively know them.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it's a real error to do like 5,000 rules without any experience.
Especially we go back to with English when, I mean, the rules are based on so many different languages. There's so much of an amalgam. They're like sedimentary rock.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exception.
Let me take us slightly off track for a second, just because this is something I mentioned before, but I just thought it was really interesting when it happened to me. And it's just part of this learning rules as you're learning the language. You know, we've talked about how if a word ends in a certain sound, like a P, and we want to make a past tense, when we add the ED, it sort of makes like a T sound at the end, right? So jumped,
right?
So I remember my daughter, when she was, obviously she's still learning the language, but when she was younger, let's say somewhere around 2 years old, I can't quite remember, I heard her refer to having jumpted.
Yep, that's and interesting.
So, like, she instinctively knew that when a word ends in the T sound, you add the ed at the end.
That's fascinating.
And she was sort of, at that point, she was sort of disregarding that jumped itself was the past tense. She was just, she just knew that the word was jumped, ended in the T sound, so you add the ed at the end to make it past tense.
Ergo, ed, yeah.
So repeat it then, Fletcher. Say it again.
So initially she would say, like, I jumped off the bed. But then a tiny bit later in her life, she would say, I jumped off the bed, right?
Wow.
Because she was learning that when the word ends in that T sound, to make it past tense, you put an ed at the end with the ed sound, the D. And so she was learning different parts of how to make a past tense and you know, going from right to wrong and then back to right eventually, because now she says jumped.
That's very cool, though, but that's like really interesting. You're seeing the process of thought.
Yeah,
you know?
Just trial super and error. Fascinating.
Yeah.
We mentioned that earlier with another example of like a kid knows the word went. I went to the store, you know, I went out.
Yeah.
Then relearns that ED is the normal default ending and then cleverly goes, I goed out.
That's happening right now. Mm-hmm. That's exact because say a year ago, she would have been saying I went. And right now she's saying I goed.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah, it really
I gotta
is.
Say though, wouldn't it be better? I'm not to sound like Noah Webster. Why not goed?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to do a quick aside from rules because this was something I've thought was fascinating because summer is coming.
I know. We're talking about summer words and swelter came up. Swelter. And do you know what the old English swelten, the verb would mean, what it meant?
Oh,
I didn't know this. It's sort of
swelten. Ew, no.
Swelten.
No.
It meant to die or to perish.
Oh my gosh. It's
so as you go, I'm sweltering. I'm literally dying from the heat. You're
wow,
getting close.
Oh, yeah.
And it came from the Old Norse, which is svelta, to put to death, to starve.
That's extreme.
I know.
That's what I was going to say. It sounds so Viking-ish, though, when you think of svelta.
It does.
He gets svelta. You know? Yeah.
To be fair, though, they think it originally meant to burn slowly, i.e. Oh, you're burnt to death, I guess.
Golly.
But I did not know that. It has much more of a...
It's brutal.
I know. It's a very brutal, ugly word. I always sort of like the
word. I don't want to use swelter anymore. Because, I mean, it gets really hot here, let me tell you. And I'm not saying swelter. I'm going to say I'm very hot.
Okay, now we're going to go for another... I'm going to swelter.
Do
I feel like I'm...
Do you want to do this?
Let's
or
do it quickly. Let's just.
Yeah,
I hate this. This was an episode.
Okay.
Cat keeps popping it in, and I keep taking it out, and she won this final.
Let me just explain. It is my fault. Ross is entirely right. But I've been collecting rules you don't realize you know, and this one is one of those ones that's particularly irritating. And Ross keeps saying, next time, so I said, we're doing it. We're getting it done, okay? So Fletcher, another rules you don't realize you know, but use all the time. Ready?
Let's do it.
Okay, the standard order of adverbs in English.
Okay. Adverbs, okay.
What here is the preferred way to say this, Fletcher? We're trying to get the idea that Monica went to the store every morning before breakfast. She quickly ran to the store every morning before breakfast. She to the store quickly ran every morning before breakfast. Every morning before breakfast, she ran quickly to the store. She every morning before breakfast ran quickly to the store.
She every morning before breakfast ran quickly to the store. The first one was she quickly ran to the store every morning before breakfast.
Right.
That's probably
it's obvious.
That's what I would go with. Yeah. She quickly ran to the store.
Okay. That's the obvious rule of adverb order. And now Kathy will explain to you the adverb order rule.
Because my brother hates me. Okay. Adverbs like yesterday, quickly, everywhere have an order. It's manner, place, frequency, time, and purpose. So the standard order of adverbs in English, it's often called, for some reason, the royal order of adverbs, which makes me panic, is you do manner first, place second, frequency second, third, time fourth, purpose last.
And you can see it. You have quickly, which is the manner of running.
Okay.
And then we have place, and then we have time, etc. We have problems with this, though, because sometimes it the order can change according to how we want to... like we have here, like she quickly ran to the store every morning before breakfast. We have emphasis, too. This is how she ran. Then we have she ran quickly to the store every morning before breakfast. This place slightly more focused on the destination.
Oh, place. Okay.
She ran to the store quickly every morning before breakfast. Here, quickly might imply urgency to complete the entire process.
Okay.
So we have like three different kind of ways of saying it, which violate that rule in effect or change the rule in effect.
Mm. Okay, because for movement verbs, the order often is place first, then manner, and then time. I hate this segment. I'm sorry, everyone who's listening to us, and it is my fault. Do not blame Ross or Fletcher.
have one more example. I'm going to bore everyone with has got us in this thing. This is an example we got from, I think, some book. So let's see. On my father's ranch place, I often frequency help gather the animals at the end of the day, specific time. Oh, sorry, I'll make a past tense. Helped gather the animals at the end of the day when I was younger, non-specific time. So, I mean, the key thing with these things is we sort of instinctively know them, and we don't need Kathy to bore us with this.
It sounded interesting when I first started reading it, but I was tired. I was very tired.
But I do think we do know. I mean, because I often helped gather the animals at the end of the day on my father's ranch when I was younger. That sounds odder. That doesn't sound as good to me.
Okay, say it again.
I'm going to say how they did it. On my father's ranch, I often helped gather the animals at the end of the day when I was younger. Now I'm going to change it. On my father's ranch, at the end of the day when I was younger, I often helped gather the animals.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And I think Kathy is correct on this one. On that point, we instinctively know which sounds better.
We do.
And then when we did the emphasis before, we realized when you change that order, there's something going on here. We want you to hear something. We're not doing this normally. We want you to know.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting though, because you see that in poorly written books. I mean, I don't mean a lot of self-published books where something's just not quite right. And often it's this issue, I think.
That's because
I think the person
you're totally right.
I just
right.
realized that. Yeah. And I don't think I realized it until right now, Ross, when you're reading that. And that's it. It's like there's something slightly off with the adverb order. And then you it's not wrong, but it's not right.
Yes. Yeah. You know? And so the answer really is that, you know, you do what sounds right. And my guess is with a lot of those poorly written books, someone was trying to maybe make an interesting sentence, and they didn't do what even probably sounded right to them. They were trying,
very possibly,
you know, they were trying to create an interesting, elegant sentence, and frankly they did it wrong.
Yeah.
And in this case it's interesting because we've talked a lot about, you know, rules you don't need to follow, but this is a rule that I think in general you really do need to follow,
well, you kinda,
even if you don't know you're following.
Yeah,
it,
well, because something, as Kathy just said, something seems wrong. We don't even necessarily know what it is, but there's something about this sentence that feels weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's subtle, because I must say, when I was looking while we were chatting for examples, the examples that are given are just ludicrous. I mean, if wrong, you know, they just are. I'm sorry. It's like, we know that's wrong. I mean, you know, always tomorrow I will blah de blah, something like that. It's just like stupid. But yeah, these are these sort of subtly, they clang a little bit in your head, you know, when it's not what we're used to.
Yeah, I mean, here's a really good egregious example, though, too, when it's really wrong. I lived at home with my parents, this is the right way, with my parents to save money while I was working on my doctorate. Okay, now I'm going to change it. I lived at home to save money with my parents. It ruins the whole meaning there.
Yeah,
it sure does.
Yeah. I lived at home while I was working on my doctorate with my parents to save money.
Yeah.
Those don't even work.
It just becomes...
No.
Yeah, you can't follow that at all.
No.
I do think Fletcher's point is well taken, though. I think that unfortunately, you're getting more people that are, when they're writing, are trying to sound elegant. And in their quest for elegance, they're ruining it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because it sounds, it's like this, you know, this sounds more euphonious somehow, but it also sounds wrong.
Yeah.
To me, you know,
it's funny because on that last one, if I do it this way, it's completely correct, but it sounds weird anyway. While I was working on my doctorate, I lived at home with my parents to save money. Even that one, that's okay.
Oh, wait a minute. Do that again. I want to hear that.
That has
one
a different
again.
Emphasis.
Yeah.
The first one is I lived at home is the emphasis. The second way I'm doing it, reversing it. While I was working on my doctorate, I lived at home with my parents to save money. That is, my doctorate was a specific time period in a way. I think it has a different emphasis feel to me. I lived at home is the emphasis here with my parents to save money while I was working on my doctorate. Mm-hmm. While I was working on my doctorate, I lived at home with my parents.
That seems more ancillary to me. It seems it minimizes the
impact.
It does.
I agree. It seems like I'm working on my doctorate. And yeah, when I was doing that, I lived at home.
Yeah, I was doing that. And now I'm going to tell you the rest of my story, which is much more interesting, I hope.
Yeah. I wish I spoke other languages well enough to really, I mean, it's almost, you have to be almost a native speaker, but to really see if that really works with other languages the same way. I'd be curious about that. Okay, another rule, Fletcher. This is another one. Kath, you put this one in this, too.
I'm sorry. I've always been a law and order girl. Everybody thinks I'm a free spirit. I'm not.
Okay, here we go. Fletcher, if and whether.
Oh.
Two similar words, two different meanings. There's a question mark implied here, okay? Okay, what, Fletcher, is the preferred way to say this? This one I had a real argument with on this whole thing, but let's go. Call the bakeries around town and find out if any of them sell raspberry pies. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Call the bakeries around town and find out whether any of them sell raspberry pies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Which is correct. Which is better.
Which is preferred.
I cannot imagine it matters.
Okay, I'm going to give you another sentence.
It doesn't.
I'm going to give you another sentence. Okay. The teachers will be asked whether they would recommend the book to their classes. The teachers will be asked if they would recommend the book to their classes.
I'm just going to guess that whether is preferred because it sounds snobbier, but
yeah, you're right for the second. The first one, they say, if was preferred.
Oh, okay. Why? Why? What's the deal here?
We think if always sounds better, personally.
Yeah, this one gets really kind of tricky to us. If supposedly introduces conditions. If it rains, we stay at home. Weather supposedly presents choices. I don't know whether to stay or go. Now, my problem is, and Kathy's problem is, if it rains, we'll stay in seems to be a choice. We're choosing to stay in.
That's true.
I mean,
we're not going to say if it rains, weather will stay in.
No. So, but I mean, I can see if it rains, I think it's more just sort of, I don't think it's as much a rule as we just sort of know it, you know?
I think this is another grammar controversy because they say weather, usually they say weather is preferred in formal context. And that's what Fletcher said. Weather sounds fancy.
Yep.
It does. Weather sounds very fancy. If does not. And they say weather is preferred when you're discussing two or more alternatives.
But when we said this earlier, if it rains, we'll stay in. We can't really say whether it rains, we'll
stay in. That's what I just said. Of course
not. So therefore, it is in a way the condition. But then it bothers me because in a way the condition still implies a choice. That's my only problem with that phrasing of the rule, if you understand what I'm saying.
Well, to me, though, the rule doesn't even apply to anything. But I mean, you have to say weather with the rain one, your example. There's no choice.
I'm just saying right here, if you have to say. Whether it rains, we'll stay in, you can't say.
No, I'm sorry. I said they're opposite way. Yes, that's what I'm saying. So this, to me, this rule is really bogus. Because of course you can't say weather.
But if you said, but this is where the rule is true in a way, even though it bothers me. If you said whether it rains or not.
You added something there. Whether it rains or not.
That changed it.
That's what I'm saying. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because now I'm presenting a choice. That's what they said with the rule. That's what I'm saying. The rule, in effect, even though I don't like the rule, it does sort of work. Even though I think if it rains, we'll stay in implies still to me a choice as with weather. But if we state the choice, that's when we have to use weather. That's what I'm saying. I mean, that's what we cannot use.
If you could say we're going if it rains.
No. I meant the opposite. I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
If I don't add the choice in there.
Yeah.
I have to say,
have to say if.
That's what I'm saying. The rule is correct, even though I don't like the rule. That's all I'm saying.
Does it matter where we're putting it in the sentence? Because you could say something like, call the National Weather Service and ask them if it'll rain. Or you could say, call the National Weather Service and ask them whether it will rain. Either one sounds just fine.
That's a choice. Yeah, those are possibilities.
Although technically, if is for one condition, whereas weather is two or more.
Yeah, but does this sound weird? Call the National Weather Service and ask them if it'll rain or not.
No, it sounds perfect.
Not at all. It sounds fine.
Right.
You can use it. I'm saying I think all weathers can be ifs. but all ifs can't be withers. Is that what I'm saying?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I am reminded suddenly of the Phantom Tollbooth, one of my favorite children's book as a kid, and they had the weather man, and it wasn't the weather man, it was the weather man. And this is reminding me of that.
Now we can just call him the if man. You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torin Anderson composed our theme music. Our digital team is Beth Golay and Carly Cooper. Carly Cooper is also our video editor. You can subscribe to our channel on YouTube. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org, or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can also record a voice memo of yourself asking your question. You might get your voice heard on air. Or you can download the KMUW app and press the Talk to Us button. You can find Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Each story you hear on Planet Money starts with a question. What happens if we refund tariffs? Why are groceries so expensive? At NPR, we stand for your right to be curious, because the forces shaping our world can be hard to see. Follow NPR's Planet Money wherever you get your podcasts and start seeing how the economy really works.